Welcome to Story Strategy Live. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, we are back.
I know. Can you believe we are on episode 54?
That's amazing.
I'm calling this season two.
Yes, definitely. we had our summer hiatus that lasted until November.
It was
a long summer. But look, we both have brand new backgrounds.
Yes. And new wall color.
Yes. It's a new and improved story strategy.
Yay. Well, so today we're going to be talking about finding your readers or finding your audience. Different ways to do that, how to know if you have found your readers, how to make sure that the people you think you're writing for are the people that you're actually writing for, all that good stuff.
Yes. I'm so excited to get back into this stuff. It's been a long time.
I know. It has been. What have you been doing? Tell us. What's happened between May 21st and today?
I had a kid graduate from high school, and then we sold our house and we moved to the country, basically. We are not in the city limits. We are in a neighborhood. It's a small neighborhood and everyone has land. So there's acre lots, and we've been adjusting to that. I've had a snake in my kitchen. I had took a phone call from my son one day as he was driving down the major road that goes through town. Town is only 5,000 people, but there is a 4-lane road that with a median that goes through town. We do have 3 stoplights. And he was driving down that road and I got a call of, "Mom, there is a horse running down the median. What do I do?" And I was like, "You need to call 911."
Is that what you do? I would not know.
Yeah, because it's a problem that if hitting a horse is bad in a car. and so while he was calling 911, I hopped on the Facebook page, which if you ever need material for a book, get on a Facebook page for a small town because it is hilarious. But I hopped on the Facebook page and somebody had already posted, "Hey, if you're missing a white horse, it's running down this road." And somebody had already replied with, "Kids left the gate open. We're on our way."
Oh my God.
so this is where I live now.
I feel like you just moved to where I used to live in Maryland, except it was less horses.
Yes.
There was a lot of Amish carriages about, but people didn't usually know that they were in the way.
I have horses directly across the street. Like, I can look out this window right here and there's horses right there. And a lot of the Facebook page is, "Hey, does anybody know this chicken?" Because it wandered into our yard, or it'll like tag somebody and be like, "Your pig's in our backyard," you know?
Oh my God.
So yeah, it's interesting here. I love it. I really do like, I did not love the snake in the kitchen. That was not fun. That was not okay. But everything else I'm really loving. And I'm loving the fact that it's Texas. It's the week before Thanksgiving and it's 65 degrees outside.
We might hit 65 today. I feel like there was a 6 at the beginning of the number, but it was 19 degrees last night.
So, and you're all moved.
We are moved. We are finally out of the rental house that was in like the neighborhood where the neighbors were like here and here. We found a great house in a fantastic neighborhood I'm really excited about. It feels like living in the mountains. There's pine trees and rolling hills. And Colorado is huge on open space. So there's all these parks and big paved trails and lots of open land. And it's perfect. So I have a lovely office. I'm very happy.
Well, and I love your pictures that you've been posting about y'all hiking and taking the dog out for walks and stuff.
Yes. Charlie Taco is happy here too, I think. He gets a lot of walks because we don't have a proper yard for him. Everything about the house will be great, but I think one of the reasons we were able to get it was that there's a lot about the house that isn't great right off the bat, especially for a family. Like our yard is actually really big, but it's not fenced and it's 100% covered with rocks, except for the front yard.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of xeriscaping here in Colorado, attention to sort of water and being responsible. And so we have a grass front yard and landscaping, but in the back, not much landscaping and just a lot of rocks. So we're slowly going to, you know, start moving the rocks and putting in some different stuff. But there's a huge back deck though that I do like. But
that's nice.
Surrounded by rocks. So it's not ideal to put Charlie Taco out in the yard because A, there's no fence, and B, rocks.
Yeah, Penny is adjusting. She was very much a city dog. She is not on board with all these random sounds and creatures. Frogs absolutely fascinate her. Like we have a lot of frogs in our backyard, and she like watches them hop and like bounces her head with them. Like, I don't, can I eat you? I don't think I can eat you.
So that's sort of our update. I had, we're not supposed to tell a funny story, but I'm going to tell one anyway, because I took boys out of school yesterday and we played a hooky and went skiing because the mountains are open now. And it was a fantastic day. We knew we were only going to ski a little bit and then come back down. We just wanted to kind of test out our gear and make sure we were set up. And we got stuck on a ski lift at the highest possible point for like a half hour. And it was,
I saw that on Facebook and like my heart hurt for you. I was like, oh my God, I would die.
It was terrifying because we didn't know why we were stopped. The gondola next to us was also stopped. And my little one, who's 12 now, he can handle just about anything. Like he's an old soul, very practical. This guy, Turbo, losing his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're 150 feet in the air and like exposed to the elements. It was freaking terrifying. And I was doing my best to be calm because I knew I'm in charge of these two people and I need to keep them calm. He's over there cursing up a storm to start with. Then he's yelling. Then he starts hysterically sobbing and like kicking his legs, and the whole chair is like, you have to stop. You are making, like, I was this close to a panic attack myself. And I'm like, if I pass out up here, everything's off. No Christmas.
You are on your own. You will be raised by wolves from now on.
The little guy is like, you okay, Mom? And I was like, yeah, I'm okay. How are you? And he's like, I'm fine. I'm like, how are you fine? But it ended. It was the most relieved I've ever felt when the thing finally started moving again. And we went and had a nice lunch and calmed down. And it turned out some poor person had a heart attack on the lift, and they had to get that person to the top of the mountain and then open up the top of the mountain, clear all the people. So they had to stop more people from arriving, bring in a life flight, and get that heart.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I saw the helicopter coming in. I was like, is that coming here? So should we talk about finding your readers?
Yes. I think we absolutely should transition from your near-death experience.
What a first world near-death experience, right? Like, really,
it's still a near-death experience. I would have totally been with Turbo. We would have completely freaked out together. Let me back up. I don't get on ski lifts, so I would not have had that problem to begin with. But if I was forced at gunpoint at the threat of my children's lives and made to get on a ski lift and it stopped and I was stuck there like that, yes, I would have totally been with your older kid. Just let's just have a complete breakdown now and it's fine.
I did question all my life choices and was like, why do I feel the need to ski? This is ridiculous. I got on here voluntarily. That was the stupidest thing I've ever done. Like, oh my God, I'm risking my children's lives. It was bad.
But. So let's talk about your finding your ideal reader. You need to know your audience. So let's talk about how do you do that?
Why do you need to know them, Dawn?
Well, because it's important to your story to know who you're writing for.
It is. It, no matter what you're writing. When I was a freelance writer, I used to write for travel magazines and I wrote for some medical journals and stuff. The thing I would always ask when I got the assignment was, well, who's your reader? Do you have a demographic profile? Like, who's going to be reading this? Because if it's 12-year-old boys, they want something totally different than PhD,
mm-hmm.
you know, psychologists or psychiatrists or whatever. So the everything from the tone of your language to the voice that you use, to the word choice, to the cadence, it's all going to be affected by who is your reader.
Well, and I think it's important to point out, we're talking about more than just age groups.
Yes.
Like, I think sometimes when people look at their demographic, I think they think in terms of, okay, so my reader is somebody between 25 and 47, and it's more important to have something more specific.
Very specific. Do you remember when we talked to Melanie Harlow? She said, I think she said it with us, I write for one woman, and mm-hmm. I have named her Kathy. I don't know if that's what she actually said, but
I think so. That sounds very familiar.
She's like, she lives in the Midwest. She is 37 years old, and I'm making this up. She said something very similar to this, not these exact words, but she has two kids. She has some college, I think. She works part-time. She's married, and she named like things that Kathy likes to do and that kind of stuff, because when she writes, she literally is writing for Kathy. Why does she do that?
Well, because that's going to direct your story. And I think when I used to be a language teacher, and in language, you talk about code switching, and code switching is the difference between the way I talk to you and the way I would talk to my, you know, neighbor who I know is very religious and very pearl clutching. And so I would adjust your language, and we do it naturally all the time.
Right.
When I was teaching high school, the way the high school kids talked to each other was completely different than how they talked to me most of the time. And it has to do with levels of respect, and it has to do with life interactions and the relationship and all that kind of thing. So right. When you take that and you put it into finding your ideal reader, that's going to influence your word choice in your books. That's going to influence what kind of level of heat you have in your book if you're writing any kind of romance. If you're writing a thriller or a suspense or anything where there's violence, that's going to end up influence how much do you show of that on the page. So it really influences every aspect of your story.
Right. So for Melanie, she knows that that reader is looking for some sex on the page, that they want a happy ending, that this is an escape for them. I guess the question that we need to answer today is, how does she know all of that? How'd she figure that out?
Magic. Of course.
Not through magic. We actually do have some tactics, some recommendations for how to figure that out. And I think it's really hard if you're just starting out. But the one thing that you can do, if this is, you know, you're approaching your very first book, you haven't even maybe started writing it yet, or you're just getting going, is to figure out who you think it is, and then look at who you think you write like, and try to figure out who reads their books. And I know that's not super tactical, but I do have some tactical advice coming.
Okay, so tell us some of your tactical advice.
All right. Well, so if you're just beginning, you are shooting in the dark just a little bit. So the best thing you can do if you're starting from zero is to look at your author comps and go visit their Facebook groups. Read the interactions, try to figure out who they're talking to and who is talking to each other in those reader groups, because that will give you a good hint about who their readers are. And if you think you write like Alessandra Torre and you're seeing what's going on in her reader group and what they're talking about, then you kind of could, what's the word, extrapolate as mm-hmm. if it was your own future reader group and write for those people. So once you get going a little bit, what I do as Delancey is I have a newsletter that goes out every week, and every month I have a book money giveaway. So if you open up my newsletter, you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see every single month an Amazon $25 gift card. And so I give one $25 gift card away every month. You can enter four times because I send my email four times a month. But I'm really only interested in your first entry, because what I do is I put a Google form attached to that. So when you click, I want to enter the book money giveaway, it takes you to a Google form. I ask for your name, your email address. Those are required. And then I usually have a few other required questions. And this is how I figure out anything I want to know about my readers, because people want free stuff. They want to win money. And so they'll usually be willing to answer some questions. And so that my last one, I just did a demographic survey to figure out if I was right about who I thought my reader was. And so I've got a lot of really interesting information, which for me validated that I was writing for the right audience, and that I was correct about who I thought I had. My readers are female, 97%. They're mostly white. They all, like 70%, have some level of higher education. Something like 20% have adult children, 20% have kids between 10 and 20. Most are married or engaged or widowed or divorced. I guess that actually pretty much covers everybody. I don't have a lot of young single readers.
Right.
Between like 35 and 75 years of age. And most work at least part-time. So I learned all of that through that monthly survey. And I ask all kinds of things. Who else do you read? Which covers do you like best? And so this is how I gather tons of audience information, but I have a list of like 8,000 people. So, but even if you have 200, this is a great way to gather some data.
Well, and I think that data can be very useful. I know you pointed out if you're just starting out, but if you are in a slump or if you expected a book to do really well and it's not, I think having that data to fall back on and be like, okay, so I thought I was writing to 15 to 21 year olds because this is a new adult book. And then you realize, okay, now my demographic is actually older than that. And so some of it's going to be a little bit different. Or if you are targeting a certain person, like if you have a person in your mind and you think, for example, they are between 18 and 21, they are in college right now, they work part-time, and are single, if you can talk to somebody who meets that demographic, or if you have somebody in your life who meets that demographic, then you can get some idea of, okay, is this something you would be interested in reading? And it puts you a little bit more in touch. Like you were talking about looking into the Facebook groups and connecting in other social media places, it puts you a little bit more in touch with that.
Right, or go look for a Goodreads group, Goodreads reader group with that age range, or, you know, cause I don't like going out and talking to people. I fear communicating with someone in my life who actually fits a certain demographic. I would much rather look online and see if I can figure stuff out. So there are plenty of resources online where you can figure out what the kids are talking about and that kind of stuff. and then what I would say for someone who doesn't have a big email list to try my tactic is set up a Facebook ad, have it go to a landing page, offer, you know, a short story for free or a book for free. And in order to get that book, they have to answer some questions. Although this is going to be a much less targeted way of figuring out, because lots of people might fill out your form who aren't going to actually be your readers, but you will know that at least your ad attracted a certain demographic and you'll get some basic information from that.
Well, and I think knowing, going back to why is this important? How does it influence things? We talked about how it's going to influence your story, because first of all, you need a story that somebody is interested in reading. If you are writing about a divorced mother of adult children who decides she's going to restart her life and move to Montana and take over a goat farm, then...
You lost me at goats, but okay.
As Nancy's eyebrows say, Dawn just went off a rail there. But if you're writing that book, you need to know who would be interested in reading that kind of book. Is your 18 to 21 year old young single college person working part-time going to be interested in reading about
goat farming in Wyoming?
The goat farming. It was Montana. Montana. So that's why I think Melanie Harlow's point was so important, is when she was talking about, I know who I'm writing for and I know what I want to reach with them. You can also take that into the additional things of, if you are digging back into your character's wound, which we've talked about in our other episodes, if you're digging back into that wound, are you writing for somebody who was abandoned by their parents, or are you writing for, and these are questions you can't really ask in a demographic study of, hey, could you please tell me everything bad that ever happened to you? But are you writing for somebody who has been cheated on? Are you writing for somebody who is, had some kind of humiliation in their life and that's formed who they are? Because that also feeds into, we all know that I'm the thoughts and emotions person, that also feeds into how do they feel about that moment? And if we're talking about creating a reader experience and talking about their drawing them into your story emotionally, that also can help you.
Right. Well, and then to extrapolate even further, and this is a little chicken and egg, if you think about what I said a minute ago about Facebook ads, because you have to enter demographic information to target a Facebook ad. But if you have a method for establishing who your demographic is and you are going to advertise your books, you've basically done your homework. You've got your target demographic to set up your ads if you have a way of figuring out who your audience is. So it helps you in both ways.
So then the question becomes, with marketing and all of that kind of thing, then the question becomes, how do you know when you've pictured the right person? Like you said, all your information confirmed for you, you had the right reader. So if I don't have an 8,000 person newsletter list, what are some other ways that I can confirm for myself, yes, I have picked the right person for this story?
Well, I mean, kind of a meta way of figuring it out is, what kind of reviews are you getting? If you've targeted correctly, if your blurb and your cover speak to that audience, and those are the people who are buying your book, you should be getting good reviews, hopefully, because those are the people that you wrote the book for. A good way to look at that is if you've ever done like the Amazon free days, or if you've ever had a BookBub deal where your book is free for a while, you will get a million readers who are not your reader. I mean, they target as best they can. Amazon targets, and definitely BookBub does, but you'll get a whole lot more takers than you will from your usual product page. And you'll see that you will also get some really crap reviews because suddenly a whole bunch of people went and read your book who were not intended to read your book. And that helps and hurts you. I think mostly helps, but that's why targeting is important. And that's why reviews can show you that you're doing it right.
Well, and I think that's important in the Goodreads reviews and the Amazon reviews to look for phrases like, oh, I loved this character, or, oh, I could totally feel for them in this moment.
Or I want to be best friends with her, or I can't relate to this. Things, or emotional statements that this book resonated with this person on a personal level.
And anything that praises the authenticity.
Yes.
Like the way they portrayed somebody working at Starbucks and trying to break into acting felt so authentic. I work with words. So I think anything like that shows you, okay, yes, I'm on the right track. This is the person I'm looking for.
So I guess your next question here, Dawn writes us notes, is when do you need to adjust your definition? So I think that kind of goes hand in hand. If you're getting a bunch of reviews that say, this did not feel authentic to me, or I can't relate to this character, she seems really young, or stuff like that, that kind of clues you in that your reader isn't the same person that you think it is, you're just not hitting that target, then either you need to write differently or you need to retarget. And either one is a fine thing to do. Neither one, you know, is impossible. You just kind of have to rejigger a bit.
Well, and I think using that as a diagnostic tool, again, like we were talking about, obviously knowing when you need to adjust your definition, if you are just starting out, that's when and we're going to talk about in a future show about beta readers and critique groups, but that's when you target who you are letting read it in advance. If you are, for example, if you are targeting somebody who is like Melanie's ideal reader of 35 to 45 and a mom with, you know, older kids, then maybe having your little sister who's a senior in high school and her friends read it is not your best group, because those aren't your people.
Right. This all comes from Marketing 101. This is your ideal customer profile, your ICP. You're looking for a persona that you can target. This is what, you know, companies and businesses do on the other side when they're trying to hit a target demographic with a product. And your book is your product. So all of your advertising, all of your marketing, all of your packaging should speak to the person you're trying to meet. And one of the ways that big companies test that is by doing focus groups, which are basically bringing in a bunch of the people they think they're trying to hit and seeing how they react. And so we'll get more into that later. Having the input of the person that you think you're trying to reach is important.
Well, and I wanted to point out too, when you were talking about Facebook groups, we think of Facebook, or I think of Facebook, because that was the first social media I was on.
When we're old.
But Yeah, the lower you get in your age target group, they're not going to be on Facebook because Facebook is a bunch of moms at this point.
Although Facebook is extremely active for reader groups.
Yes, it is very active for reader groups.
I guess I'll caveat that for my reader groups, for romance, maybe not for YA, maybe not for fantasy. I don't know.
Well, that's where you get into having to know that there's others out there because there's booktubers who do the reviews on YouTube, and you go in and you look at those comments. And then there's Bookstagram, which is the Instagram tag of people doing reviews there. And now there's a whole book side of TikTok.
Internet book talk.
Yes. Yep. I think you need to cast a wide net kind of on things. So if you do find an author that you appreciate and you're like, no, I write like this person. If you liked their books, you're going to like my books. Then check out all of those little, like when you were saying, go to their website, check out all their social media that's listed there and see all of the different places they are and see all of the different places who are replying.
Although if you're looking at me, don't go to my book talk yet. We're still working on it.
I don't have a book talk, so you're a step ahead of me.
My kids are like, Mom, it's not book talk. Why do you keep calling it that? I'm like, oh, you don't even know.
Yeah, you have no idea.
Side of TikTok. They're like, are you going to start dancing? I'm like, it's not like that.
But we totally want to see that if she does, right?
I have stupid videos on there because I didn't know what I was doing, but I'm taking a class. Okay. I feel like you're taking a class to learn how to post on TikTok. And I'm like, no, it's a whole separate thing. Shut up.
Yeah. Well, and I think that also goes with finding your reader, because if your readers aren't on TikTok, if you're the person you're trying to target isn't on TikTok, you doing your silly dances is awesome. And we will be posting them in the Story Strategy Saloon. But that's not going to convert for you.
Well, and that is actually something I should test in my newsletter questionnaire. And I haven't. Which social media platforms are you on? If you're reading my newsletter, you're my reader. So are you on TikTok? Should I even bother?
Because we all feel so... I do have to say my sister-in-law is a librarian and she sends me TikToks with book reviews or book things and that kind of stuff all the time. So
it's kind of a cult thing right now, at least in our age group. Like it's definitely for younger people, TikTok is dominant.
Yes.
But for people our age, book talk is like this little cult thing that some people are really into, some people don't know about, some people are just figuring out, like me. And so I think there's a fear of missing out as an author, like, ooh, a hot new marketing trend that I can be the first one on is what a lot of people are thinking right now. And then two, you know, are my readers there? Do they expect to see me there? Do they want me to be there? So those are all, right. I think then you have to weigh out too, like how much time do I have?
Yes, that's a whole other episode. But yeah, I do think if you, and of course this is, I am not a marketing person. My thing is story. But I do think if you are writing, targeting younger groups, if you are writing YA, definitely they're on TikTok. And yeah, Facebook is for old people.
I mean, this is totally a different conversation, but because my kids who are younger, like my son is 14, although he doesn't read a ton, my 12-year-old reads a ton, but he's not allowed on TikTok. So I guess it's not a good question, but I was going to say, do those kids even know that like there's book reviews and stuff on TikTok? That's not what they're searching for. It would be me looking for book reviews on TikTok.
I think the ones who are readers do though.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think if you're that age and you are into reading, especially if you're into reading any kind of series or any kind of things that happen within a certain world.
Yeah.
I think they definitely.
I don't know. We're definitely outside of our.
Yes. Yes. But our point is you need to know who you're writing for. And
where they
you adjust to them because you want them to buy your book.
So I think. I mean, there's not a whole lot more to say about that. I did just want to give some tips for people, you know, to locate their audience if they're not sure how to figure out how to find them. So hopefully we did that. But with that in mind, we can talk a little bit about some of our previous shows and what's going on with them. They were published as podcasts. They are on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe, hit that like button. And they are being repackaged and pushed out to all of the podcast distributors. So not all of the shows, but the most popular ones. So you'll be able to find some of our older shows as podcasts. I'm going to try to focus on repackaging the ones that are really heavy on craft, story strategy stuff, so that if you want to revisit characterization or tension or whatever, you can find those easily. And going forward, all of our shows will be produced as podcasts and pushed out to all of the platforms. So subscribe at your favorite platform, please. And if you want to leave a review, that would also be really awesome.
And most times you don't even have to use words in your review. You can just click the little stars, and we're happy with stars.
I didn't even know that. Very good. And then we're going to do one live story strategy a month and one.
These are our plans for how we're going to get through December, because we wanted to come back. We missed y'all so much, but we're coming back in the middle of the holidays. So this is how we're going to get through December. And then we've got plans for next year too. So,
So for December, one live, one recorded. So you'll get two new story strategy episodes. And then we'll also post some of our favorites from last year. So you can rewatch if you're really missing us.
Yes. And so that's kind of going to be our pattern going forward, is that we plan to do one live a month because we like doing the live. We like having the interaction. We know we had to go a little bit earlier than normal today. So some of our normal people who would be here for us for the live, they couldn't make it. So we want to do one live, and then we will have one recorded, and then we will be bringing in previous episodes to remind y'all that those exist. And then we have some fun stuff planned for next year. We're not ready to talk about that quite yet, but it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Interactive. Good
yes.
stuff.
Yes.
And then,
so we just put it in there, December 16th?
Yes, Thursday.
It will be Thursday, December 16th. And on that show, we're going to be talking about submitting your work. Where do you submit? What's a good place to, what's worth your while? What's probably not worth your while. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And then we will talk a little bit more, hopefully at that point, about our plans for the new year, because we'll do the one live show in December, and then it'll be holidays and all that kind of craziness. And then we will be back in January, but we promise this is not going to be a 5 month summer long.
I hate it. You again in February. No.
Yes. Yes. So, and we just want to remind everybody that we do have the Story Strategy Saloon on Facebook. So join that group. The activity in there has been kind of slow because we were so crazy with both of us moving, but that's going to pick back up. And the Instagram will pick back up, and the Facebook page. And then evidently Nancy's going to be on Book Talk. So we will totally bring that in at some point.
Good. That sounds great.
There was no sarcasm in that tone at all.
Yes, we will not be seeing my Book Talk. You'll have to find that on your own. And it's not me, it's Delancey Stewart. So separation. That's what I told my boys too, because they watched every single one of them with me in the car, forcing me to listen to myself. And they critiqued them for me. And I was
children
like,
are so amazing.
This is not fair. Because these are not me. It is not your mom doing this. It is this, it's a brand. Like this is a company. Think about that. And they were like, they're still stupid. I'm like, okay. Thanks so much.
Yes. So supportive. They're Thank so God. Supportive.
Yeah. They're like, you talk about your sex books on TikTok? I'm like, yeah, that's what I tell everyone. I've got sex books on TikTok. That's
Yes, that's that. You should totally make that your tagline now.
Textbooks on TikTok.
TikTok. There you go.
Yeah.
Yes. So. No. Okay. So we really appreciate y'all listening. We have missed you. Kate, thank you so much for showing up and being live with us.
Yes.
And we know this is a short show, but that's okay. We're just kind of getting back in the groove of things.
Yes. And happy Thanksgiving ahead of time to US listeners. And we will see you again in December.
Bye.
Bye, guys.